Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. This week we are joined by the amazing New York comic Adam Gable. We discuss Mitch Hedberg's 2003 hit album, Mitch Altogether. So stay tuned for more Comedy Album Book Club. Yeah! Welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I am your host, Matt or Dill. This week we have an awesome guest, flew all the way in from New York, and boy, were his arms tired. Adam Gable joins us. He has his own comedy album, None of This is True, which you can hear on your streaming services. Please give it a listen. We sit down and we get into the headspace of Mitch Hedberg. Honestly, I am shocked that we haven't done a Mitch Hedberg album before now. There's been a lot of people who wanted to talk about him, who thought about talking about him, but always ended up landing somewhere else just through whim. But he's been somebody who's been on a lot of our guests' lips, and this was a really interesting conversation. Now, before we get into the episode, I just want to let you know I will be taking a bit of a break. It has been great being back and doing these episodes, and I can't think of a better one to wrap for a little while on, because Adam is an amazing guest and it's a great conversation. But I just need some time. It's the summer holidays, and I'm just going to be recharging my batteries for a couple of months. So I will be back. Look forward to you tuning in some more to more Comedy Album Book Club. And we talked about joke density and joke stacking and the process of writing a joke. We got a lot into Adam's process, and we talked a lot about Mitch's experience within the comedy world, and how tragically we aren't going to get a chance to hear him talking about things like the internet or cell phones even. He was tragically lost far too young, but the albums are still out there. The specials are still out there. Give him a watch. Give him a listen. And thanks for joining us as we talk Mitch Hedberg's Mitch Altogether.
Mr. Pibb. Mr. Pibb is a replica of Dr. Pepper, but it's a bullshit replica, because dude didn't even get his degree. Why'd you have to drop out and start making pop so soon? The commercial for Diet Dr. Pepper says it tastes just like regular Dr. Pepper. Well, then they fucked up. I went to a doctor. All he did was suck blood from my neck. Don't go see Dr. Acula.
So, welcome to Comedy Album Book Club. I am joined today by Adam Gable, a New York comic visiting Toronto. So, you're in the office space. You're one of the first people to be interviewed in real life. So, welcome.
Oh, thanks very much. I didn't realize that. I wouldn't have come here if I normally do it remotely. When you said I could come in studio, I thought that meant that I had to. I wouldn't have spent the. Well, let's just say it like this. I'm going to wind up spending 6 hours waiting for WestJet on the way home.
Yes. I appreciate you joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So you chose Mitch Hedberg's Mitch Altogether, his 2003 album.
Yeah. When you originally asked me about this, I was like, oh, well, everyone's going to pick this album. I literally, like, in my head, there's no other album to pick. It's not even like a preference thing. It's like when you said no one had picked a Mitch Hedberg, I was like, really? Okay. And I mean, just that's to me how much that album is, perfect is a strong word, but that what a good example of a comedy album that is, that the idea that nobody had picked it before Like when I was in seventh grade, we had to do a book report on a novel about the American history, about the American Revolution. And the teacher said, "You can't read the book My Brother Sam Is Dead," because he had read too many book reports on My Brother Sam Is Dead. And so that's what I thought you were going to say. And then,
I've had a lot of people say, "Oh, I really want to do this and Mitch Hedberg, like this comedian." And it's always been like, and it's always come down to the flip of the coin. And
people, really?
So, yeah, I mean, lots of people have like been on the verge of doing a Mitch Hedberg album. I mean, I remember like, you know, he was big in that wave of like 80s, 90s comedy TV.
Yeah.
And which is what I grew up on, wall era before the comedy bust and that kind of thing. So I saw him sort of as part of that wave in the late 80s, early 90s kind of thing.
I think you had greater access to him than I did being from the Midwest. He was really big. From what I understand, he was really big in the middle of the country. I didn't see him until after I graduated college. So I didn't, it was actually would have been 2000 for sure was the first time that I, now, you know, I was stuck in college. I watched a lot of comedy in college, but I was very narrow-minded. So if I didn't know somebody, I didn't watch them. But I'm pretty sure that the first time I know that the first thing I saw was the Comedy Central half hour that he did, mm-hmm. which would have been in the late 90s. But you're right. He was very big in the Midwest in the 90s. I just had no access to him at that point.
For me, it was like, I was kind of a comedy slut growing up. Basically, it's like I took whatever I could get because it's like, oh, I didn't have a license because I'm epileptic and I couldn't get a driver's license. Okay. So I was close enough to the city that the kids in the hall were like making their sketch to comedy like a little over an hour away, but I couldn't easily get to the city.
Yeah.
So I was just like watching whatever crappy, you know, Carolines or improv and it is like 9 out of 10 of the comics were just like the, you know, Jerry Seinfeld mold observational. But then every once in a while you got like these really these gems that would shine through, and I remember sort of him being one of those gems.
My sister and I were really big on Stephen Wright, who think we had seen him on SNL in the mid 80s, back when they still would occasionally put stand up on, and like when they would actually just like, here's a random stand up you haven't seen, as opposed to here's, you know, Kevin Hart doing a monologue. But like you would occasionally turn the show on in the mid 80s and you just see somebody doing stand up. So we saw Stephen Wright, and my sister and I would, you know, I was probably 8 and she would have been 13. So she was probably a lot more savvy about what it was. But the jokes that she really picked out were the ones that stuck with me a lot in my lifetime. And then in my early lifetime, and I would see Stephen Wright on some of the stand-up comedy. We had this thing called Comic Strip Live, which used to air at 11 o'clock. It was originally at Igby's in Los Angeles, and it was Wayne Cotter, and then Gary Kroger took over. Mm-hmm. And so we'd see, you know, I'd see stand-up like that, but there wasn't anybody doing anything like Steve. You thought Stephen Wright, he was the only one who could do something like that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess I must have fallen out of interest with stand-up in after college. Because I watched, you know, I had Comedy Central, but we used to say that Comedy Central in the 90s was like a guy with a drawer full of movies. And like, he just like, oh, PCU, I haven't played this today. And then like, you know, the thing at the, like he opened the drawer again and he just played History of the World Part 2. So it's on the top. So he's like, all right, I'll put that one in there. Okay. Young, you know, so you occasionally see, I mean, I must have seen the same 15 sets from, you know, Jeff Ross or Laura Keitling or whoever was big at the time. I never saw Mitch Hedberg until I got back from, and I remember I went to Birthright Israel in 2000. I got back from Birthright, and my friend Josh Hyman, who's just changed his last name, Josh Ohana, he said to me, I got this new comic, his name is Mitch, and you gotta watch him. And I was like, oh, and I said, what's the last name? And he said, I don't know. He didn't know what it is. So I had nothing, just Mitch. And then my friend Matthew Piercy, who was from a different Canadian Matthew that I'm friends with, he said, oh, he was watching it. I guess he was up late. His now wife had fallen asleep and it just came on. And he started quoting it all to me. And I was like, oh, That's what I've been looking for. It's like, I mean, that the half hour has the, you know, has the role of the escalator joke in it. And some of the stuff that's on Mitch Altogether is also on the half hour. And I was like, oh yeah, those are the kinds of jokes that I've been looking for. And that would have been 2000. And, you know, he had an album out by then, but I didn't. Strategic Relocations. I didn't know anything about it. And I was kind of an idiot about comedy. I didn't know. Like, I didn't realize. I feel like before the internet, it just felt like, oh, I don't know anything about that.
Yeah.
So I'm just never going to know anything about that. Like, now you can sort of sit down in front of, you know, I guess I could have sat down and asked Jeeves where I could find Mitch Hedberg. but then when I went to, must have been the Virgin Megastore in Times Square, and I bought and I saw they had Mitch Altogether. And, you know, it's in the, I don't know if you've seen the original pack. It's a two CD set.
Yeah.
Right? Because the first disc is just the audio, is just the album. And then the second disc is the edited and the non-edited version of the Comedy Central special, which if you're a comedian and you haven't seen the non-edited version of the Comedy Central special, you really gotta watch it because you see how badly he did.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, it's really the show. His set was about 40 minutes and or maybe it was like 35, and they cut it down to 22 for Comedy Central.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they loved him, but if you watch the unedited version that comes along with Mitch Altogether, you could see it really was not going well for him. He sat in the middle of it. He sits down in the back and he's just sort of reporting his jokes to the floor. And eventually he gets them back and he stands up and he finishes. You don't see any of that in the 22-minute version. And then there's like one more, a couple more Letterman bits. But to me, I mean, on that video, the video disc. But to me, the Mitch Altogether is, you know, the album that he did is really the culmination of everything that he did for comedy. He's got another one called Do You Believe in Gosh that he was working on, but it didn't. He died before he finished it.
Yeah.
So if you listen to that, you can. My friend Chase and I, you always say it's sort of half baked. Mm-hmm. It's weird because he's got a good album that he made first, then his second album is amazing, and then his third album is sort of not as good, and it's a weird arc for an artist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if that is sort of like in process, or
yeah.
Yeah. I feel like him, Stephen Wright, Emo Phillips are all sort of like of that
right.
school of like very dense, not there. I almost call it like one and a half liners because like they're one liners and sometimes they dawdle on a little bit longer kind of thing. And he just packs them so densely.
Yeah.
Like I love what I like this album. Like, you know, just going on the sandwich bit.
Right.
Whereas, and I can speak, you know, I mean, you can speak better with more authority than I can about a New York sandwich.
Yeah, right.
But, like, it's true. Like, we went and ordered a sandwich. I'm like, this is three sandwiches. But then he's like banana bread and mayonnaise. It's like, just he mastered escalating, but they're still really dense and like quick and snappy.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And it's really
well, one of the things that he does that one of the things that he does that I've taken on a skill is he'll I call it joke stacking. So here's a bunch of jokes on the same subject. So it seems like I'm doing 2 minutes about hotels, but really the hotel bit about the do not disturb is completely different than the 13th floor joke. Is completely different than the girl. I got the girl's number. It's zero. It's completely different than the two trees involved. Those are all, but it feels like it's all one long subject.
Yeah.
But really, those are all individually short jokes. With regard to the thing you said about one-liners, it's this weird, and this is something I started to realize when I was beginning my own comedy career is, you know, one thing about the sort of one-liner comedian, the you know, in quotation marks that we don't really acknowledge in the name is the absurdity of the subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I think is kind of hard to pin down when it comes to which comics do it, because Mitch is very like the subway stuff, that's two really long stories, right?
Yeah.
There's the one story about how when he was in Ireland and he treated the subway as if it was the American consulate.
Yes.
And then there's the other part about the ducks, and the duck thing is it's a very long, it's like a lot, there is, it's not a one-liner joke. I mean, no. There is the one-liner joke. He says, I feel like a duck's opinion of me is heavily influenced over whether I have bread. Yeah. But that's not the point of the joke. Yeah. It's a story about how he realized that he could get free, you know, how he could get free food at Subway. And that's really one of the things that I think is masterful, particularly with this album, is there's a lot of stuff that feels like it's all intertwined. And in reality, it's not. I mean, the best example of it is there's the album. The track is called Pop. Right, mm-hmm. I think it's track 7, right? So the first joke is Mr. Pibb is like a ripoff of Dr. Pepper, but he's a cheap ass ripoff because dude didn't even get his degree. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Right, which is, and then the last part of that track is, you know, he does the athlete's foot joke, and then he says, I don't even want to be on the cover of Wheaties. I'd rather be on the cover of Rice Krispies, right? Snap, Crackle, Mitch, and Pop. Because in Hollywood, it's all who you know, and I know Crackle, right? Yeah. Again, Pop. You don't know whether or not that track is referring to the Pop Mr. Pibb or yeah. Pop as in Snap, Crackle, Mitch, and Pop. It's a very good, the grouping of random ideas is a good way, I think, on an album like this, because it's easy to do 14 different subjects in 6 minutes, mm-hmm. right? I found that, you know, doing longer sets as somebody who bumps from subject to subject, audiences can get tired. Mm-hmm. And they get, their mind wanders. They start to realize, oh, this guy's, about 20 minutes in, they're like, this guy's going to talk for an hour and not say anything of substance at all.
Yeah.
I can fade away and start to think about my grocery list and come back in and maybe I'll miss the end of one joke, but I'll be right there. So it's hard to keep audiences involved in that kind of thing. It's not just, I mean, it's surprising. Even as somebody who does a lot of short jokes, it's surprising how much an audience can stop listening after they've laughed at too many jokes.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on your album, None of This Is True, I find you have a Hedberg-esque cadence. Like, for people who do short jokes, I find that the delivery is that much more important.
Yeah, I think so too.
In a lot of ways. Like, you know, Phillips and Wright and yourself and Hedberg, you all have a very distinct personal voice. It's not like you sound alike.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's unique to the material and it helps the material flow in a lot of ways, I find.
I think that, thank you. I think that's right. I mean, I think that when you have a less realistic and less normal kind of delivery, it subtly, subconsciously tells the audience that what they're getting is in a different kind of reality. Yeah. And it makes it easier, I think, for them to go with you when you're going places that they normally wouldn't want to go. And B, also lets them know, okay, I'm not missing anything.
Yeah.
There really is nothing here. This is just another joke about sesame seeds. This is not, there's no subtext here that I need to think about.
Yeah. And I actually find that, I mean, I don't know if it's maybe like how I grew up in comedy and comedy appreciation, but I find like it's much more challenging to get something really funny in such a dense package than like, oh, you know, 2 minutes or 3 minutes or 4 minutes is like, I mean, the longest track on here is 4 minutes, 19 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's like like 5 or 6 actual jokes.
Yeah.
And it's a much more skill intensive thing to be able to boil it down to the real kernel of what's funny there.
Sometimes I tweeted this once when a comic says that these are my one-liner jokes, I know it, that these are the jokes that they took time to edit. Right.
Yes.
Which is, but I mean, a lot of what we do and a lot of what's happening in comedy now is sort of this emotional connection. And mm-hmm. In some ways it comes from society looking, you know, times are hard, although who knows whether or not times are any harder than 100 years ago when people were saying times are hard. But we certainly feel like times are hard and people are certainly looking for a decoding of the mystery around us and appreciating, you know, there's a lot of tension in the air and tension between people who there hasn't in the past been tension between. So it's,
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Some ways it is easier to get people to escapist humor can be easier on a short in a short form, because people, you can get people to stop thinking about the you know Darfur for 5 minutes, but it's a lot harder to get somebody to think to stop thinking like that for 45 minutes. But I think one of the things that is, you know, Norm Macdonald, I remember years ago on Last Comic Standing when Andy, Andy Erickson, I think is her name, right? She's the tall, she's again of the same kind of vein. Yeah. She has a very unique delivery. She's she has a very different kind of visage, and she's very cute, and she has she often talks about things like unicorns, and so her delivery is also a little bit different than reality. And she did some set on Last Comic Standing, and you know, she finishes her 6 minutes and they get to Norm Macdonald, and he says, and this is a classic Norm moment, because he paused and he let the moment, you know, let the moment hang there for a very long time. But he said, you know, when you're doing what you're doing, the jokes have to be gold. Yeah. Right. And then this is where he just sat there and like didn't say anything for 5 seconds and said, and your jokes are gold. So she was like, oh, thank God. You know, it could have very easily been, and you suck. Yeah. But he, you know, he said, your jokes are gold. And I think that's true. I think that the joke, if you're not really saying something and you're not connecting to someone on an emotional level, then what you're saying has to be so right on that it tends to elicit huge laughs consistently.
Yeah.
But I've also found that it can be hard for those of us who are used to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Then you get a big audience, and there's some people in there who don't quite understand why is he talking about nothing. And I often kind of wonder what would have, you know, you hear it on Do You Believe in Gosh, that some of the jokes are not finished, but the audience loves it.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously everything on this album is polished and really put together. But I almost want to hear from Mitch an album where he was not good.
Yeah.
Where they didn't like it. Or he was, you know, or maybe the jokes were really strong and they didn't laugh, and what that was like. You never got that from Mitch, I think, because at the time comedy, you know, there was not that pulling back the curtain on comedy that we see now, where it's like there's nothing wrong. You see, it's not hard to find a video of somebody telling Mark Norman he sucks. It's not hard to find that.
Yeah.
And I would like to have seen that. I would like to have seen some level of that where he's doing these rapid fire jokes and the people just can't, they just can't keep up.
I have to wonder, like, in this, like, Instagram, TikTok world, I think his type of humor and delivery is almost built for it.
Yes.
It's a shame that we lost him so young and so tragically, because I think he would be bigger now than ever.
I think that one of the things that comes with that kind of writing is volume. You know, I mean, he was around from whatever, you know, let's say 1990, right, to 2005, right?
Yeah.
Or 2005 is when he died. And so he's 15 years doing comedy. You know, we've got three albums, right? So how many jokes did he write that you didn't, I mean, I, you know, not to, there's a lot of volume and a lot of, oh, this joke makes sense and is funny to me. Mm-hmm. But I think it would have been fun to be a follower of his and to see what the jokes that didn't work seemed like and how he dealt with them. Mm-hmm. But I know I'm not necessarily of the mind that he would have, you know, album worthy. He would deliver 3 album worthy tweets every day just because the volume. And it's not, I don't think that, you know, I don't think that it's shitting on him. I think it's just, there's a volume there and there's a certain amount of stuff that just doesn't work.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, those joke writers for, you know, TV shows like Late Night and all of that. They have to write like 300 jokes a day and maybe 2.
Yeah.
Maybe make it to the monologue or make it onto a desk bit. So it's, you know, like you said, volume.
Yeah.
You know?
I also try and I try and think about, to me, what's sort of more fascinating is how he would approach, because so much of what he's talking about is related to pop culture. You know, I saw this commercial. They said they wanted me to forget everything I knew about slipcovers. So I did. And then they tried to sell me slipcovers, but I didn't know what they were. Right. That's. And then there's like, I'm trying to think if there's another one that is specifically related to something happening. Well, the Doubletree joke, you know, I don't know, right? I don't know what hotel I'm staying at, but I can't tell you that there are 2 trees involved. So I try and think about what would he write, what kind of jokes would he write about the things that we have today that we didn't have. I'd like to hear a cell phone joke from Mitch Hedberg.
Internet jokes.
I mean, and that actually is something that. It helps me because I, you know, anytime that there's something out and I go, that's out, that wasn't out in 2005, I think, well, you know, how would Mitch think about this kind of situation? And that helps me to sometimes come up with a slightly different version of what everybody else is looking at. So to me, I would love to hear, you know, just his take on, I guess, social media, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Probably very humble also. Be interesting.
Yeah, well, as far as like, your process for developing these short jokes. Like,
oh yeah.
What do you go through to write those?
Interesting. I'm like a almost always writing backwards kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Like I'll come up with what I think the punchline would be, and then I'll try and write the I'm gonna look at something that's like half done like that. I'll try and write the like I've got one. Like here's one. It goes. It just says, "Wash my mouth out with cilantro," right? Because we were at dinner last night with somebody who was talking about how when they eat cilantro, it tastes like. So my initial joke on that, which I tweeted right away, was I'm the type of person who cilantro tastes like I can't afford to eat here. So that's the other approach, right?
Yeah.
So the other approach is that somebody says something and then I just come up with a sort of left turn to it.
Mm-hmm.
But more often than not, I find myself writing a joke backwards from the back of the joke, from the punchline. And you know, I've got this thing I'm working on right now about bifocals versus bisexual and how sort of the sort of sexual fluidity would relate to, you know, vision, right? So like you have bifocals, I have panfocals, or these are sapiofocals, I can't see anything if you're an idiot, that kind of thing. So that's a lot of what my joke process is how can I put these two things that are sort of disparate? I find the connection and then I try and color that in, as opposed to, I think a lot of people write, a lot of more emotional comics write from the front of the joke, how they feel about the particular situation. And they write like a genuine feeling. I'm angry that the TTC got rid of the streetcars on whatever street it is for 2 years, right?
Yeah.
I find that the problem with that is that then the feeling has to be genuine. And that to me is what I'm most fluid about. What I'm least fluid about is whatever sort of intellectual connection I've made. So that's really where so that's why I don't write from the emotion first, because sometimes the emotion will change in order to make the joke better.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If I have a humorous, like, word thing, and I'm like, I at first I'm angry about it, and I'm like, that's really easier, it's a lot less convoluted if I'm happy about it. All right, well, I'll just change my perspective on the joke, and now I love this thing.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're not cool for a lot of people, but when I was taking Second City improv for ages, and then I made the jump and did their level 1 and level 2 stand up, just to, you know, changed my mind because I couldn't get into a particular class. And it's like, I've always wanted to be a stand-up. I've been afraid of it. What the hell? I'm going to do it. And that was one of the things that, like, my teacher in that first year or first class was, listing and, just play with the emotion. If you like something, pretend you hate it. If you hate something, go from a place of like you can find the funny sometimes by just shifting your perspective to a different angle than what you would normally look at it from sometimes.
I have we have a writing group that I usually do in the city on Tuesdays, and the city being New York, and a lot of times people find that, like, you're very to you the joke is about hamburgers, but in reality this joke is about working in a kitchen. And if your process about explaining this thing with the hamburgers is too complicated, it might just be easier if you're making fries. But I wrote down it's the hamburger joke, hamburger joke, hamburger joke. And you go, no, it's about fries. And you go, it's like hard. Sometimes you need other people to bounce ideas and to tell you what your own joke is about. And I think that, training myself to look at my jokes from an external point of view, what would the people who were teaching me comedy early on think about this joke? Or what would... could I use this joke as an example to somebody that is paying me to teach them about comedy?
Yeah.
Does this joke follow the rule that I'm trying to hammer into some new comic's head? And that doesn't necessarily mean that if it doesn't, that it needs to be changed, but it might be why the joke isn't working. I mean, there's plenty of jokes that I've written where I've been like, oh, on paper, all of the rules say it should be like this. But when I do it like that, the laugh is not as big as when I do it like this, which is... So, it's the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah. Now, do you have a favorite bit on this album? It's so dense. There's so many jokes.
It's hard to say. I wrote down when I was listening to it again just the other day, I wrote down, you can't, this is no video here, but I wrote down every joke that I thought I wanted to talk about. And this is all, it's a page and a half of jokes. It's got to be 75 jokes on here.
Yeah.
And it's, and in some cases it's just Kit Kat. So, but other times it's like, there's a, it just says, the crazy straws or even better. Here's a couple jokes that I think are really important. Okay. The one joke that I think is the most important is the one where he says, I was going to get my teeth whitened, but fuck that. I'll just get a tan instead.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's so great about that joke is that it's just shifting the perception of two things over just a little bit. Such a simple joke. Such a simple joke. I think that to me has got to be the most effective joke for what it is. Because that's all it is. That's all that joke is. It's just that one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, the arrow and the target stuff is what is the best flow of, because it starts with, he goes, I got a cold sore. I put Carmex on it. I don't know if it heals a cold sore, but it does make it shiny and more noticeable, right? Maybe we could get a highlighter that heals a cold sore, right? It's like a cold sore highlighter. And then he says, maybe we could get an arrow that heals a cold sore. I don't like an arrow because it tells me what I'm trying to do, right? Screw you. I'm not going to do what you said. Screw you, two-thirds of a triangle, right? Then he goes, imagine getting killed by an arrow. Look at that. Oh, this guy died. Let's go that way, right? Yeah. And then he goes, and then there's a target joke. I tried to go to Target, but I missed. I think the entrance to Target should have people all splattered around. When I finally get in, people say, can I help you? You go, no, I'm just practicing. I mean, to me, the flow of that almost feels like one whole joke, which is why I think that is sort of the most effective of that, sort of what you were referring to before, of the idea that it feels like it's a very long bit, but in reality, it's just a bunch of individual jokes stacked together.
Yeah.
And then I really like the Peter Frampton joke because, number one, it's a very funny idea that he says, I smoke real pot with a guy who looks like Peter Frampton. I was in the movie with Peter Frampton. We had to smoke pot. We'd smoke fake pot. It's way better than smoking real pot with a guy who looks like Peter Frampton, which I've done way more times. All right. That's just a funny joke. But what I like about it is that then he actually tells you about something.
Yeah.
Right? I was in this movie with Peter Frampton and I didn't know much about him. So I had to make, and it's like in that moment for once, and you get it a little bit with him sometimes. He's got the joke about, it's not on this album, but he's got the joke about how his sister's family has a portrait and they're all looking slightly to the left. And you know that that's a genuine moment.
Yeah.
You know that that's real. And so I like the Peter Frampton bit because it feels like we're getting, it's like the thing he would do on panel at the couch.
Yeah.
Because it's a real story. So I think those are, I mean, obviously there's a million other things here. Yeah.
Like, but so for me, similar to that, it's the newspaper joke or a bit where he's like, no,
oh, yeah,
2,000
yeah.
newspapers or two dumpsters.
Or two dumpsters, and yeah.
That lands with me. I did the exact same thing as a kid. Back when you know, children had paper out. So I was like, went to a laundromat, dumped them, and then just played video.
That's one of those things where if you can pick on the thing that everybody knows but nobody has ever said,
yeah.
It'll be a huge laugh no matter how you spell it out. And it's not a particularly... It's a great joke, but because he was able to go, oh, here's something that I remember that most people probably have forgotten and nobody said anything about.
Yeah.
And that's why I think that joke is so effective.
Oh, and one of the things I really enjoyed too is like his bit about Southern speech, yes. Dropping the letters. And it's just like, not so slow, but very like increasing ridiculousness.
Right.
And
again, another genuine moment where he was, but the only thing I would say about that is that that's probably based on a real experience he had.
Yeah.
But he's not really angry about it. He's just making it up. But it's a good example of when you take somebody of little steps, you know, you slowly introduce this concept and then it gets more and more abstract to the point where you don't even really need to understand what he's saying to get, I want to get the fuck of this. That doesn't mean anything, but you can fill the letters in on your own by then because he's handed you so much of it already.
Yeah. Yeah. He's giving you the keys to the house kind of thing.
Exactly.
Now, if people wanted to listen to your album or check out your jokes on Twitter or social media, where can they find you?
So I always tell people the best way to get me is adamtellsjokes.com, which is my website. I have an album out, which is called None of This Is True. You can listen to it on Spotify. There's a link on my website. If you go to my website and click listen at the bottom of the page, it'll take you to the landing page where you can listen to my album for free on Spotify. You don't even have to listen to it. You can just hit play and walk away. That's fine. With me. I need the streams. I always tell people to listen to it on Spotify because something that's interesting, and this is, I mean, I don't know if you've gotten to it, the idea of how the comedy album has changed.
Yeah.
It used to be that you were trying to get people to buy your album. You know, this whole thing is about this. His album starts with this CD in stores, and he talks about, you know, the only way my previous album could be in stores is if I brought it and left it, right? Nobody buys albums. There's not even album stores anymore. So and the money is not in the purchasing. You know, I mean, I have not told anyone to buy my album on iTunes. If you listen to it on Spotify and I get the streams, that goes towards my, you know, my online presence, which is what I need. Ideally, if anyone listening to this hears me on Sirius, please find me and take a picture and send it. I'd love to know that my album's on Sirius. I'm also on Instagram at AJGABEL. Most of my jokes, actually, every joke gets on Instagram. I'm also on Facebook if you're older. The only thing that Facebook that I do on Facebook that I don't do on Instagram is I post these memories from years in the past. And I was writing a lot of jokes during the pandemic. So anything between like in the second half of the year, I'll repost my jokes from the pandemic. So it's a good way to get more content from me if you're looking at older stuff. But if you get me on Instagram, you'll pretty much get everything I put out these days.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thanks very much for making the trek up to Toronto from New York.
Well, I will be sending you receipts. There's a plane flight that you need to reimburse. I did upgrade to business class, which I'm not going to get you for, but okay. The baggage, because this is a very heavy notebook, and they made me check it under the plane, so that's going to go to you too.
All right. I will watch for the receipts.
Thanks very much, Matt.
Thanks very much.
Super fun, man.
You've been listening to Comedy Album Book Club, a Far From Here comedy and showbizmonkeys.com co-production. Music today was performed and produced by Glenn Beauchamp, Tim Matthews, Edith Falkenberg, and Jim Spruill, also known as the Something Something Quartet. Thanks for listening and tune in next week to Comedy Album Book Club.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.